Hey everyone, thanks for joining us again on the Let's Clear the Air Energy Podcast. I'm Adam Murray with my co-host Andrew Parker. Andrew, how are you doing today?
Good, Adam. How are you?
Not bad, not bad. Excited to introduce Stuart Salters, the new Vice President of Federal Affairs for the GPA Midstream Association. Stuart, how are you doing?
Doing well. Glad to be here and chatting with you guys. Thanks
Welcome
for
to
joining us.
GPA.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Real exciting. So instead of a long bio, we're gonna let you introduce yourself. But before we get to that, we always start off with an icebreaker with our guests. And we're just past Halloween here, just past the election, but I think this question is still relevant. So let's clear the air. What's the best Halloween candy to give out to trick-or-treaters?
That is a very good question. And first of all, let me just be clear and upfront that we are team full-size candy bars at my house. So
Yes, there you
there's
go.
nothing fun about fun size, is what we like to say. But I will go to my grave that the best combination is chocolate and peanut butter. So I am a big Reese's fan, and that was handed out at my house and maybe hoarded a little bit.
Reese's
Awesome.
is a solid choice. I'm gonna go with Kit Kats as my favorites. But to your point about the big chocolate bars, I don't know what trick-or-treating was like when I was a kid, but I know if I got one full-size bar, that was like it was a win. And my 6-year-old came home this year and he had like 8 full-size candy bars. So like the times are changing when it comes to trick-or-treating. I don't know. Adam, what about you, man?
Oh, they go big in Texas, man. Our neighborhood too. We got one block that is very well known for the full size Snicker bars and the adult beverages. They also have adult trick or treat stations that you can go to. But I agree with you, Andrew. I am a Kit Kat fan on Halloween for sure.
No doubt. Well, both of those are solid choices. But anyway, Stuart, appreciate the time. And look, you're new to GPA. We'd love for you to spend a couple minutes just introducing yourself to the GPA listenership and tell us a little bit about yourself and your experience and what led you to this role here at GPA.
Yeah, happy to. And again, appreciate the opportunity to share a little bit. So I started out as a civil engineer. That was my undergrad degree. Went to Mississippi State University. So for Texas and Oklahoma fans that are now part of the SEC, welcome. We are glad to have you. Maybe a little, probably shouldn't say this, but I guess I'll go ahead and say we're better, happier to have Oklahoma than Texas. But now we'll one day maybe Mississippi State will compete with those teams.
There you go.
But right out of school, had the opportunity to work for Chevron. So actually did engineering work for about 6 years. Worked at a refinery for 4 years and did upstream production kind of. Operation type stuff for Chevron in the Appalachian Basin. So when I was there in 2012 through 2014, they still had some assets up there. They've since got rid of those, but was able to get some really good experience in the field up there. And then after that experience, kind of always wanted to do government affairs, wanted to do public policy, and so had the opportunity to move from Chevron to the American Petroleum Institute. So I was at API for about 5 years. Did pipeline safety policy, did some refining policy. A lot of what I did on the pipe, or not a lot, but I'd say some of what I did on the pipeline safety side related to gathering lines. And so I worked a lot on the new version of RP80. Also did some PHMSA engagement when it came to gathering lines. And so had some experiences working with the GPA members. When I was at API. Right after that experience, got the chance to work on utility policy. So moved over to do government relations for the American Public Gas Association. And that's where I was prior to this experience. So the opportunity, I was informed of this opportunity to do the VP job, knew that my predecessor had moved on. And so just thought back to my times at API and the great relationships that I had made with some of those folks in this midstream space, some of the issues that we worked on that were really interesting and really challenging. And so, threw my hat in the ring for this opportunity, and here I am.
Well, it's great to have you. And so VP of Federal Affairs, what does that mean? And what are you hoping to do and accomplish for GPA Midstream?
So, a lot of my role will be representing GPA members here in DC. And so, what that means is trying to engage on policies important to GPA members. So, whether it's engaging the Pipeline and Hazardous Materials Safety Administration, so PHMSA, on, pipeline safety policy, whether it's engaging EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, on environmental policy. And then even engaging folks on Capitol Hill, so legislators that are making the laws, directing the agencies what to do, passing their budgets, talking to them about policies and kind of perspectives that are important to GPA's members, GPA Midstream's members. And so, we like to have a presence here in DC, just recognizing the role that these policymakers play in our members' operations. And so I'll be here and trying to fight the good fight.
So you've been in DC, what, 10, a little over 10 years now. Being new to this role and bringing about some new eyes on kind of what we're doing. Do you anticipate any collaboration? You mentioned API and American Gas folks you worked with, but do you anticipate any collaboration and how often do we work with other organizations?
Yeah, good question. I think that's collaboration is key, and by all means, I hope to foster that. I think there was some existing, but by all means, I hope to continue that, and if not, improve upon the existing relationships that GPA already had. When you think about the environmental regulations that are kind of up in the air after what happened last year on election day, but some of those environmental regulations are it's key for us as an industry to come in and provide perspective to those regulators so they know the fulsome picture. I mean, I think there's burdens by some of the regulations that we've seen on everybody, but I think collectively, especially if there's a company or an organization that has assets in each part of the value chain, providing that collective perspective, which can be done through, collective comments, for instance, to an agency, is key. And so, whether it's, EPA or pipeline safety, whatever it might be, I want to make sure we're working together, singing from the same songbook.
Well, let's dig into that a little bit. I mean, to timestamp this, here we are, what, six and a half days, 6 days after the election. We obviously know the outcome, but how do you see, this election here a week ago, shaping federal policy or what it might impact the midstream sector moving forward?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of prognostication
We won't
that.
hold you to it, yeah.
Okay, good. All right, good. Well, that's all I need to know. So, what's going to happen? No, I mean, I think, say what you will, the Republicans tend to be more favorable to oil and natural gas. I think the Democrats kind of recognize some of the challenge with not seeing the value of natural gas. I mean, they're kind of coming around, but I think you can see that the Republican in the White House, Republicans in Congress are going to have more favorable policy towards oil and natural gas. So I think you'll see that in this next administration, in this next Congress. I mean, there are still some votes that need to be counted, that votes that need to be counted to confirm who's in majority in the House, but I think reading the tea leaves, you can kind of see that there will be a slim majority. Republican majority in the House of Representatives. And so that'll be full control of both Congress and the White House. And so, you're going to see a lot of reversing of policies from the previous administration. There's when you think about policies specific to GPA members, a lot of concern was around what happened from EPA's or what came out of EPA's Office of Air and Radiation. And so, you'll see this administration trying to undo some of that. And we'll want to be educating the new administration on what needs to be undone and what can stay and what's important to stay, just given that, we're all in this, we're all trying to achieve sustainable energy, right? We're not trying to pollute the water and pollute the air. I mean, we're all in the same boat, rowing the same direction to have sustainable energy for Americans. And so, it'll be a transition for sure, but it'll be exciting to kind of get in there and talk to these policymakers and help them understand, hey, we would love to see this change. We'd love to see this stay, having those types of conversations.
So maybe more specifically then, what does that look like? You've got some of the things under the Biden administration that were pretty hotly contested, the methane tax, the Quato, the new Quato rules, right? Are those going to be, you think, completely walked back by the new Trump administration or modified, maintained? I mean, programs like that, what is the future of that legislation?
Yeah, when you think about a change in administration, there's a couple tools in the toolboxes that a couple of tools in the toolbox that people can use. One of those being the Congressional Review Act. And so the Congressional Review Act is it makes sense, right? It allows for Congress to kind of overrule any policies that may have passed in like the 11th hour, right? So if you here you are. You just realized you lost the election, so you can't just cram a bunch of rulemakings down Americans' throats as you walk out the door. And so that's a tool that this is that the next Congress. And so how that works is Congress, both chambers, decide to roll back a regulation, and then they pass that Congressional Review Act, and then the president signs it. And so you really kind of have to have all three chambers to really have a lot of success with the CRA, with the Congressional Review Act. But that's one way that some of these regulations may be walked back. The other way is to legislate. And so when you think about how the methane fee, the waste emissions charge, came into being, it was through what's called a reconciliation package, which is key because it doesn't require 60 senators, which is the filibuster proof majority. So you just have to have a simple majority to pass a reconciliation bill. And so you could see also a reconciliation bill passed by this Republican Congress next year that rolls back some of that stuff, which could include the waste emission charge, the methane tax.
Are
Hopefully that's
these,
not too wonky, but that's kind of
but
what
so
we.
is it a complete walking? It might be, I don't know, is the answer, but is it a complete walking back or is it a modification? Like, are the new Quato rules going away entirely or would they just be modified?
Yeah, that'll be the conversations that we have with API, we have with INGAA, we have with the other trade associations to figure out what is it as an industry that we want. Is it a complete rollback, or can we live with some things? I mean, the challenge there, Andrew, is that what if it's a complete rollback? Like you could easily see like some groups, environmental organizations swooping in and suing, and then we're kind of in this like litigation stage. And so, is there a way that we can live with some stuff, and frankly, live with it because we're doing it already as an industry, right? There's already good practices y'all are doing, members are doing to mitigate emissions in their operations that Quato was already kind of pushing forward, right? And so, maybe you can kind of live with some of that, but there's other things that are very much challenging and need to be walked back, and those are the kind of conversations we'll have as a collaborative first, and then visit with lawmakers on what may be the best way to fix some of what was put out by the previous administration.
Other than rolling back and looking at, not to be burdened by what has been, to use a saying from the election, but rather than kind of looking back, what do you think, some policies might look like moving forward? Are there any target-rich items that we're looking to get through.
I think a lot of what could come from this new administration, could come from this new Congress, may not be directly impactful to like a GPA member, to someone doing gathering, to someone doing processing, but very much ancillary and very much indirectly impacted. So you could see a lot of effort put to improve access to federal lands for production. So you could see some basins open up, some federal lands open up where maybe they were previously closed, so to speak, in one way or another, just based on policy. You could also see permitting. And so a lot of what permitting reforms you may see may be more impactful to like a transmission pipeline operator, but by all means, you've got to have somewhere to put the gas once you gather it and once you process it. And so having more access to pipelines because permitting reform is enacted could be one of the first things you see out the gate from both the Republican Congress and Republican White House.
Yeah, do we think after the past 3 terms, do we think Keystone gets finally completed?
I don't know about that. So, and some of this is, I mean, some of this is very interesting to watch too, because there's the market, right? I mean, I think policy is one driver, but there's also the market. And so I'm not the Keystone Pipeline operator, but there may not even be a need for Keystone anymore, just given the way the market has moved and how crude oil moves differently than it did, I guess that was 2008 when that thing was first proposed. And so how many ever years ago that was. Same with natural gas, right? I mean, you may see all these federal lands open up, but does that mean producers are going to start operating in there? They're going to be just like everybody watching the market to see where the price of natural gas goes. Now that you will see some policies that impact LNG, right? You had this administration which put a quote pause on liquefied natural gas exports. I see that then one of the first things that goes away in the new administration, and so is that demand enough to cause producers to access these federal lands that are now be opened up? You see demand for power generation, whether it's artificial intelligence or other demands out there. And so will that be enough to drive these producers to produce, which would, provide a need for gathering, for processing, for the midstream activities?
Well, I'm bouncing around a little bit, but this is something that I've always kind of been curious about. And with your knowledge of DC, there are a lot of committees on elect, generally speaking, unelected officials that get put in place. So are there any particular committees or lawmakers that we should focus on for, spreading our message, advocacy or collaboration, or even trying to influence as a voter? What committees do we work with?
Absolutely. Good question. So from a congressional side, the key committees would be the Energy and Commerce Committee in the House, and then to a certain degree, Natural Resources Committee, maybe not as much as Energy and Commerce, but Energy and Commerce Committee, Natural Resources Committee, PHMSA is kind of has dual jurisdiction in the House, and so that's Energy and Commerce as well as the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee. So those are kind of the three that I think are key to keep an eye out for. And one of the things that's going to be important is whenever you have a new Congress, the members of those committees change. And so you could see that, for instance, you're going to see the chair of the Energy and Commerce Committee change because the woman that was in charge, Kathy Memois Rodgers, is not, she retired, so she's not back here next year, so her position will be open. And so that'll be interesting to kind of see who is in charge of that and how they're going to run the committee. Who are they going to put in charge of the subcommittees as leaders? And so that's important to know. And I think for GPA midstream members, it's very important to know, especially if you have operations in that individual's district. And so if you have operations in that individual's district, I encourage you to reach out. So we can tell you what you need to do. On the Senate side, Energy and Natural Resources is a very important and influential committee when it comes to issues we're watching. PHMSA is kind of overseen by the Senate Commerce Committee. And so that'll be one that we'll kind of want to keep an eye on to stay in touch with. The Environment and Public Works Committee in the Senate is also a good committee to kind of keep tabs on. Similarly, if you have a footprint in that state that the senator represents, like knowing, where they are in the committees is key. So you can have that opportunity because it's, I mean, there's always the first 100 days, right? Where, the president's going to do what he wants to do. His administration's going to do what he wants to do. Congress is going to want to make a big splash. It's always important, like that splash is going to be done and there still needs to be education happening. And so there are lawmakers that this will be their first time in Washington, D.C., and they don't know what we do as midstream operators. And so knowing, educating them, making sure they know what we do and why it's important and how some of these regulations can be burdensome is key. If you're going to be on ENR, if you're going to be on Senate Energy and Natural Resources, you're going to be on Senate EPW, like there's a fair chance you know already, you're educated on that topic because you want that position. But still, knowing that there could be an opportunity to educate these folks on the issues important is good to know. And again, we're happy to make that connection, happy to make sure folks know that information's needed up here and willing to have conversations with members about how to do that.
I what's crazy is listening to you talk is the utter whiplash with energy policy that we're all going to feel at some point. Like what a just the polar opposites in terms of how the Biden administration and more than likely the Trump administration is going to approach energy policy. And it's going to be, I think, a lot of people are going to be kind of like, well, wait, we haven't had these conversations in 4 years. And I think a lot of that, and you might have said it a little bit earlier, it has to do with the way people think about energy, right? And I think the Democrats were, it was too little too late, right? And I chaired a panel back in August, and we talked a little bit about Pennsylvania because I thought that would be a really telling state. How Pennsylvania went would tell you, I think, a lot about how much people value energy in this election. I'm just curious from your perspective, Stuart, what the election results, well, maybe we think we can read in between the lines about the election results and how people think about energy.
Yeah, and real quick before I get into that, one thing I just wanted to say is to kind of, and I probably fumbled your Quad O C question earlier because that's what I really hope, and for me, I see an opportunity is to make policies that are long lasting, that they're sustainable, to use that phrase, and so you don't get this whiplash, right? I mean, don't work for a for-profit company, but I know GPA members, Midstream Association has for-profit companies as members, and so to operate a business where you're going back and forth every 4 years is just not sustainable. And so, can we get policies in place that can stand up to litigation, that can stand through both administrations, because yeah, it's just can't go back and forth.
Well, and to your point, I mean, my business, we're trying to figure out our pro, we have, services that we can offer Quad O, right? And it's hard to plan now. Either way, there's been so much uncertainty. And yeah, some people would probably disagree with this statement, but yeah, I feel like the Quad O rules were an interesting exercise where there was actually a fair amount of collaboration between the EPA and bodies like API and GPA. And so I do hope personally that it doesn't go away completely because I think there's a lot of good positive things that are coming out of that rule that quite frankly I think the industry is on board with. So for it to just get scrapped entirely would probably not be in the best interest of the industry. But that's my personal opinion aside. But yeah, I mean, I think at the end of the day, like people are maybe catching on to some of the realities that, the energy promises made by the left are not as, near term as they were led to believe. And oil and gas can be, I don't want to say a bridge energy, but a smart alternative domestically for years to come. So yeah, maybe just elaborate on the mindset of people in energy right now.
Yeah. I think that it all comes down to the pocketbook, right? And so that's where you see people's perspective on energy. And that's frankly, I think a lot of why the former president, President Trump, will be the next president is because he had a winning message when it came to inflation. And that message could have just been as simple as I wasn't in office the past 4 years, right? But that's what won. Because that's what people were feeling. And when it comes to inflation, a lot of your bills are energy bills, right? Whether it's your utility bill, filling up your car, there are things that you pay for directly tie a lot of things you pay for directly tied to the energy industry. And so he could, that's, and I think that's the message from the Americans that was kind of, we saw from the election results is people care about what they pay and how much they pay. And if you make a move too fast, too soon to renewables, it's gonna inevitably drive prices up, for a variety of reasons, whether it's utilities gotta, figure out how to do wind and solar and natural gas peaking, or whether it's they gotta prorate your utility costs because they're investing in all these wind and solar programs. And so it's I think that's, hate to be simple, but I think that's really what happened is people saw their prices go up and they said, I can't do this.
It's true. I mean, the inflationary, there's two different, solutions to that inflationary issue, right? You saw the left, the Democrats kind of propose, right, going after corporations, and the right go saying, well, no, like we got to get energy costs down, and that's what's driving a lot of this. And yeah, I think it was really interesting to see a state like Pennsylvania go red again. And I think it showed you that there were people in that state whose minds were willing to be changed at the importance of, that play in particular, right? When you think about all the natural gas available. I tell my mother, she lives in Massachusetts. Like, man, you should be so mad at your energy costs right now, especially here in the wintertime, because
Right,
the state
right.
of New York will not allow a pipeline to traverse, and as a result, you get stuck with the bill. And that sucks, So,
Yeah. No, it is.
that
I mean,
brings
I.
up a good that brings up a question that I had. In your experience, the word tariffs has been thrown around a lot. What, in your experience, like, how do you think that might impact whether it's pipeline or oil and natural gas or materials that we use, what should we be thinking about with regards to these tariffs that have been thrown out there?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a challenging one, and one where I think GPA and our members are going to play a pivotal role just because it's going to take a lot of educating. When President Trump won in 2016, took office in 2017, I was at API, and we were challenged by some of the tariffs on pipeline steel, and there was a very which I support. I mean, I'm all for domestic manufacturing, providing jobs for Americans. But when you think about an industry like the steel industry, it's hard to just like turn a switch and make a factory that's making, car parts make pipeline steel. It's different grades, it's different, metals, different combinations and all that stuff. And so you can't do that. And so I'm willing to support the steel industry, continue to do what they're doing, continue to, if it's that auto part manufacturer, put in another line that makes auto parts, don't put in a line to make pipeline steel because that supply chain may already be mature and it may be from overseas companies, especially when you think about some of the, particular metallurgies that are used, whether it's a processing plant or maybe some, different types of products being moved through pipelines. And so that's where I think we just got to be sure we're educating folks coming in. Not that we, have different intentions from them when it comes to like policies towards China or whatever it might be, but just recognizing, hey, it's not the same supply chain, right? What you do to build a car is going to be different than what you do to build a pipeline and pipeline steel. And so we'll see. I mean, I mentioned it at the outset. The Republicans tend to be more favorable when it comes to oil and gas policies, but that doesn't mean I don't have a job anymore, right? I still got to come in and say, you know, hey, that's a great idea, but it's not the best idea, or let's think about how we can reframe that idea to make sure it is truly beneficial to our industry. And so it'll be, those will definitely be conversations we'll have with this next administration.
You still have your work cut out for you, Stuart. You're not getting off that easy. Something tells me. Well, Adam, you want to take it away to the close?
Yeah, so it's actually pretty good timing, right? So at the end of all of our episodes, we always ask folks, you know, Stuart, it's 3, or in this case, maybe 4 years from now, you come back on our podcast and you're happy. What has gone on over the past 3 or 4 years that has caused you, Stuart, to be happy about what's going on?
No, awesome. I love these questions. So I think for me, we kind of alluded to it during the conversation. It's policies in place that can be sustained regardless of who's in the White House, regardless of who's in the Congress. And I think these policies are truly impactful to, you know, the GPA midstream members, but then also impactful to the you know, positively impactful to the environment, positively impactful to American consumers. I hope to see policies in place that strike that right balance between energy affordability, energy reliability, and energy security, and then of course, you know, cleanliness, environmental safety. And so if we can hit those marks as a nation, as a country, I would love to see it. The other thing I would love to see is obviously GPA midstream members engaging with us in that progress. You know, I think we do what we can to tell the story of what midstream operators do, but you know, we need support, you know, whether it's, you know, anecdotes, and they could be, you know, anecdotes that aren't attributed, right? Just a midstream operator did this to improve his environmental footprint, you know, or it could be attributed to a particular company. But you know, we need stories to help tell on the Hill, and by all means, we need into regulators, and we need, you know, members to also tell some of those stories to the folks on the Hill, to the regulators. And so would love to see, you know, kind of all of us working together to get those policies that provide energy affordability, energy reliability, energy security, and of course, environmental benefit.
Yeah, I think that's a great message, right? Like I know I just said it a few minutes ago, but it would really stink to see some of these frameworks get torn down, right? Like sustainable policy making that is done between industry and the government. Sometimes it's not perfect, right? There's things we can improve upon, but I kind of like that notion of saying, look, like we don't necessarily want you to come in and just, you know, burn down the house. Right. It's there's still a lot of good things that have been done, and you know, we don't, I think there's an image, right? Kind of the way that the public consumes the industry, there's an image issue, right, at stake, I think, a little bit coming in and doing that. And so man, I think if that was the case in 3 or 4 years, I'll be really happy too.
Yeah, for sure.
So
Well, Stuart,
looks.
how can our listeners get in touch, or where can they find you, or you know, where can they come and learn more about the GPA from you?
Yeah, so always want to direct people to our website, so gpamidstream.org. You can learn all about what we're working on, some of the recent filings we've done on our website. You can also learn about the committees that we have, and like I challenge folks to be a part. That's a great way to be a part. Join a committee, support our efforts in that way. We'd love to have you participate in our committees. For me, you know, I'm easy to find through email. I think my email is online, but just in case, it's just first initial, last name. So SSAULTERS at gpamidstream.org. I also try to stay active on LinkedIn, so folks can always reach out via that medium.
Awesome.
So always try to put some information out there, and then keep provide some updates to folks that follow me, or I can't remember what you call it. I don't think it's friends on LinkedIn, but whatever.
Followers, yeah, followers.
Yeah, whatever. That that thing.
Well, look, Stuart, great conversation. Look forward to seeing you at future shows, and look forward to seeing what you're going to do for GPA and its membership. So welcome. Thanks for the time. We'll see you soon.
Bye, everybody.